Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Here till 5 o'clock. Opening bell with Steve Grzanich at 5 and the great Steve Cochran at 6. It's Monday. That means it's time for the Monday Morning Movie Reviews. Colin Suter and Eric Childress always join me. A little bit different this week because Eric called in and we had a report from South by Southwest where Eric is live. He always goes to the film festivals and we get exclusive live reports from Eric. And it was fun talking to him about the film festival. But let's get back to the new movies for you guys to see. Colin, thanks for your patience, man.
No problem.
All right. Let's start with, I have not seen Only Yesterday. And that seems to be a movie that you have seen. Can you tell us about Only Yesterday?
Yeah, Only Yesterday is from Studio Ghibli, the animation studio, responsible for all those great Miyazaki films. And actually redistributed by a studio called G-Kids, who has been putting out some really, you know, some of the best animated movies over the last few years. So some of the more grown-up, more sophisticated animated films, a lot of the obscure ones that get nominated for Best Animated Film that we've never heard of, those are from G-Kids.
Yeah.
And this is actually a 1991 film.
Right. I remember reading about this one a long time ago.
And it's
got a release now. It's playing at the Music Box.
Yeah, now has an American or English dubbed version that I guess it didn't have before. And it's a very simple coming of age tale told in flashback by the main character named Tycho, who was voiced by Daisy Ridley, and as the adult version. As an adult, she's a 27-year-old who is, has a very busy job, taking a vacation on a farm and is learning more about agriculture because she might want to change her life and get into that. But she's constantly reminded of the events during her fifth grade, and the film flashes back to these moments, things like when she got her first period, how she could not understand fractions to save her life, noticing boys and, family dramas and stuff like that. So the film goes back and forth between past and present as, the younger version is exploring all these things and the older version is trying to figure out who she is and how these moments, sort of directly or indirectly affected her life, even though she didn't really know it at the time. So this is not, even though it's animated, there's nothing really fantastical about it. It's very grounded in reality. This could have been a live action film, which is always something hard for me to get used to after a while. When I'm watching an animated film, you're sort of waiting for, those moments and you realize it's not going to be that kind of film. So it took me a little bit of adjustment, regarding my expectations while watching the film. I found it kind of, it was hard for me to really sort of get into the rhythm of the film and get into the characters because it was, there's not a whole lot of, not much in the way of conflict here. Everything's very agreeable and everything's very kind of just, going with the flow of these situations where you're not really, as you're watching it, you're not really invested in any particular situation and how it's affecting everybody. If it's in fact infecting everybody. It's not until the very end when you start to realize, okay, I guess this is why we're on this journey. So that it's kind of a hard film to recommend, but at the same time, I don't want to deny people, I think a lot of people would get something out of it in terms of, their own personal memories of fifth grade and everything. Cause normally this sounds like my kind of movie, but, it's the journey getting there. I think is a little bit too long. It's a full 2-hour film. And it kind of feels like it. But at the same time, I feel like there's some value in this, in movies that are just kind of based on, they're just sort of meditations on these memories that are, seem frivolous or whatever, but are actually kind of actually do kind of affect your life. So it's kind of a movie that is, you know, the journey isn't quite as interesting as the destination. So I'm kind of giving a mild recommendation. Like I said, it's animated, but don't expect it to just sort of blow your mind, with these flights of fancy or anything like that. It's, I never want to steer anybody away from a Studio Ghibli film. I just don't.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
But this one didn't quite do it as much as it did everybody else. It got 100% on Rotten Tomatoes. I'd say see for yourself. If you're in a Studio Ghibli and the stuff that they do, if that's your thing, go see it. If not, I don't know. It's kind of a tough one to recommend.
Yeah.
But
now, in terms of animation, is there anything special about the animation? Is it kind of typical of the studio?
It's typical of the studio. There wasn't anything that particularly jumped out at me as being, awe-inspiring or remarkable or incredibly detailed. That's another thing. It's kind of the animation is standard Ghibli, but not quite as strong as a lot of their other films.
Right. Okay. All right. Well, I can understand your hesitation to to not recommend it. Do you know what I mean?
Because
they do such amazing work and have been responsible for such remark. Now, is there an explanation as to why it took 25 years for this movie to get an American release with an English soundtrack? Is there any story behind that?
I'm sure there is. I have not looked at it yet because I just watched the movie tonight.
Yeah, okay.
And I just didn't have I meant to look that up and I didn't. But I'm curious myself.
Yeah, I mean that's 25 years.
Yeah,
I guess it's
not the kind of movie like My Neighbor Totoro or Kiki's Delivery Service or Spirited Away, where it's like this is something that's going to, blow people's minds.
Right.
We got to get it out there. It's
right.
More low-key, coming-of-age film that could have been a live-action film easily. And, maybe they just didn't see any Western appeal for it.
Yeah.
Until now, for some reason.
Okay, it's a little strange, but we'll do that.
Yeah.
All right, listen, we're going to break. Colin, why don't you hang on? We'll get back. All right, it's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. Let's get back to the movie reviews. I have to say, I did not see The Brothers Grimsby.
Oh.
Yeah, so, it wasn't real high on my priority list.
No.
I'm not a fan of Sacha Baron Cohen, as you know.
Right.
Now, this is his latest. I could have seen it, but I chose a Terrence Malick movie over Sacha Baron Cohen's latest. So, yeah.
Understand that.
I think you can understand that. Now, you're actually, before we get into this, you actually do like Sacha Baron Cohen, correct? I mean, you were actually a big fan of Borat, right?
I was a very big fan of Borat.
Mm-hmm.
And I liked. I thought Bruno was okay. I thought The Dictator was okay. And I'm just, isn't there another one between those two?
Well, he did the Ali G movie, which I believe got.
I've never seen it.
It's terrible.
It's not good.
It's terrible. But I don't know if that even got a theatrical.
I think they got a release in the States.
Yeah. I saw it on cable.
Yeah,
so
where most people here saw it.
Yeah, now let me just say this. Here's the thing about Sacha Baron Cohen. I gotta say, I think he's enormously talented. I would not take that away from him. I think he is an incredibly talented guy. I don't like any of his stuff.
Yeah,
but I really like him in movies where it's not his stuff. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
I loved him in Hugo. I loved him in Sweeney Todd. He's hilarious in Talladega Nights. So when it's not his stuff, I'm for it, and I'm very disappointed. And I read all the news stories as to him he pulled out of doing the Freddie Mercury movie, and I thought he would have been great as Freddie Mercury.
It just seems one of those parts that he was born to play.
Absolutely.
But apparently there have been a lot of creative differences.
Yeah.
Him and other people who are involved, so maybe we should respect that.
No, I do.
Absolutely.
I mean, I think from what I've read, that his respect and love of Freddie Mercury, it really put him off what they were doing creatively with it.
Yeah.
Then
again, he's behind this film.
Right. Okay. Now let's get to this. This is the Brothers Grimsby. So here we go.
Yeah. So here he plays a long lost brother to a secret agent, spy, assassin played by Mark Strong. And the two find each other after being separated for about 20 years when they were orphaned. And now Cohen is married to Rebel Wilson, and they have 5 or 6 kids, including a grandkid, and they live in a dodgy part of London. And he's got these big exaggerated mutton chops, and he's just kind of an man-child idiot.
Now, by the way, do you know who the visual that he has, like his look? You know who it's based on?
Is it one of the Gallaghers?
It's Noel Gallagher. Yeah, he based it on Noel Gallagher. And I will say this. He made an appearance on Conan last week, and I saw it online, where he tells this hilarious story about him meeting Noel Gallagher.
Uh-huh.
It's out there, Colin.
Okay,
just it's his appearance on Conan last week telling this story about his his encounter with Noel Gallagher, and it's hysterical, and he decided to base the look on the character after Noel Gallagher.
Well, okay, that probably doesn't surprise me. I mean, and there actually is a reference to him looking like Noel Gallagher.
There you go.
So there's a joke about that. So they find each other. How they find each other is irrelevant here, but they are now completely different people, and so this is your typical buddy formula as they team up to track down this other assassin and try to foil a plot to release this noxious gas all over England during the World Cup. The movie's only 82 minutes, and the plot is secondary, so there you go. And this is, maybe we should be glad that he's not involved in the Mercury biopic, because his films have deteriorated in quality with each passing film, starting with Borat, and then, with Bruno and The Dictator, and I swear there's another one. Not thinking of right now, but this is as low as he can sink, as far as I'm concerned. This is a pretty desperate and unfunny film that definitely goes for the vulgarity. There's a scene that is going to be sort of talked about above every other scene in this film, and it will be talked about in the same breath as Freddy Got Fingered, in terms of how far it goes to disgust the audience. Mm. It involves elephants.
Okay.
That's all I'm going to say.
All right.
And it does go beyond what Tom Green did in Freddy Got Fingered. It really does. And it's almost as if the movie exists for that scene alone. But there's also just, it's Sacha Baron Cohen just sort of foregoing cleverness. I think he's a very clever comedian, instead just going for the raunch and the gross out humor as extreme as it can get. I wouldn't call this, like you defend Freddy Got Fingered as a piece of performance art.
Yeah.
I don't think this goes quite that far.
And one of the reasons I get so angry about Sacha Baron Cohen is because Tom Green was doing this stuff 20 years ago. And people would say, oh, he sucks, he's an idiot. And then suddenly Borat comes out, which is the same exact kind of humor. Exactly. Because most of Borat, 90% of it was staged. But people suddenly go, oh, Sacha Baron Cohen is a comedic genius. He's a satirical icon. Whereas, Tom Green, it was the end of the world when he did that stuff. So the double the double standard that makes me angry.
And I think you're right that does exist now. I mean, I'm looking at the the tomato rating here, and it's at like 37%.
Right.
And I'm pretty sure if this was Tom Green doing the exact same thing, it would be a lot lower.
Oh, yeah.
So
oh,
there's
yeah.
a lot of people who are giving this thing a pass because they don't want to look uptight.
Yeah.
But it's just not funny. I cracked a smile a few times here and there. I mean, but it just goes for a lot of easy gags and a lot of easy gross out humor that anybody can think of. And it was one of the more, depressing movie going experiences I've had lately.
Yeah.
From a guy I am a fan of.
Right.
And I think can do a lot better than this.
Yeah. Hey, welcome back, by the way.
Yeah.
You can take a couple of months off and boy, oh boy.
Yeah.
Boom. Here
yeah.
you go. Enjoy the Brothers Grimsby. I saw the Red Band trailer for this. I'm trying to remember what movie it was I can't remember what it was, but they showed the Red Band trailer. And the Red Band trailer, as soon as the Red Band trailer, halfway through the trailer, I was just like, man, this is just going to be torture. It's going to be torture.
I had that feeling too, and I thought, it's just a bad trailer. Sony does that a lot, and it is that bad.
Yeah.
It's as bad as the trailer makes it out to be, and it has that sort of hyperkinetic direction with the action scenes, and the story just does not follow any kind of logic at all. Everything just kind of happens haphazardly without much motivation. It's just. It's just kind of sad to see.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Well, the Brothers Grimsby, not good at all. All right.
No.
Colin, hang on, okay?
All right.
Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Monday morning movie reviews continue. Colin Suter is with me. And Eric is went back to sleep because he's got to see 45 movies in Austin, Texas tomorrow. And we welcome Colin back to the show. Hi, Colin.
Hello there.
All right. The aforementioned Terrence Malick movie that I chose to see is a film called Night of Cups. Colin, tell everybody, if you can, about Night of Cups.
Yeah, he doesn't make anything easy, especially when trying to describe the storylines of his film, but here we go. So Christian Bale plays a comedy writer, because when I think comedy, I think Terrence Malick. And when I think about comedy writers and what they look like and how they act, I think of a morose Christian Bale.
That's right.
I don't know why Tina Fey thinks Judah Friedlander thinks that's what comedy writers look like, but whatever. Anyway, Night of Cups is Bale thinking back to all the women in his life and each woman, as well as his father and his less successful brother, played by Brian Dennehy and Wes Bentley, respectively, they all represent cards in a tarot card reading that Christian Bale gets during this film. Christian Bale is being the Knight of Cups. So the film is separated by chapters for each card, and the women are played by Imogene Poots, Kate Blanchett, Natalie Portman, and many others. Again, comedy writers never have a problem landing women like that.
Right.
And in that Malick sort of way, the characters kind of float in and out, like they're in a dream, as Bale often finds himself indulging in these hedonistic lifestyle choices, LA parties and strip clubs and all that. So that's your basic story description for a Terrence Malick film. Now, people who know Terrence Malick's films know what they're getting into when they buy a ticket. If you don't, you're going to want to stay the heck away from this film.
Yes.
I don't want to deny people the experience of a great talent, Terrence Malick film, but there's films you should start with, and this is not one of them. If you're gonna explore his work. This to me is an extension of his last film, To the Wonder, with Ben Affleck, which I was the first Terrence Malick film I did not like. And I think these two films suffer from Malick's just obsession with editing and not staying in a moment for more than 30 seconds before we're on to the next thing. And, you know, I think he's at his best when he, when his style suits a big theme, a bigger theme that he's exploring that I can connect to. You know, I can connect to a lot of the crazy stuff in Tree of Life and Thin Red Line and New World and all that stuff. And I love those moments where, you know, you're just kind of floating through this dream that a character is having, or they're, you know, lost in thought and having those great inner dialogues and everything. And I hear, I think it's all just, as with To the Wonder, it's just kind of a mess. I feel like he doesn't have a grip on what he's exploring, really. I think he's, him and his cinematographer, Emmanuel Lubezki, are so caught up in just the look of everything that everything else is just kind of falling by the wayside. And it doesn't really matter if he's connecting with an audience right now. He's connected to himself. And it feels more, it's getting to feel more and more like self-indulgence and self-parody than a pure exploration of a theme or a character's soul. There's only so much of these characters wandering into the frame, looking morose, staring at the ground, not talking to each other, and, you know, nothing happening that I can take before I just sort of let the movie just flow over my head. And I just started just to admire the pretty pictures. And that's what I was struggling with this film, because I knew I got where he was going for with the Knight of Cups and the tarot card readings and how tarot cards are about the forces acting, you know, in your favor or against your favor or against you. And, you know, what these women represent for that. But after a while, even that got to be just it. Even that started to feel empty to me as a theme. And this is another disappointment from Terrence Malick, that, you know, I'm a fan of his, and I'm still looking forward to his next project, which sounds amazing. And I think maybe he'll have more of a grip on that. It's the documentary about, you know, how the world began. And I'm very much looking forward to that. But these last two films just feel like they're just kind of they feel more self-indulgent than anything else.
Okay. I am a massive fan of Terrence Malick as well. And I believe that you and I have felt exactly the same about each of his movies.
Mm-hmm.
Because I, too, was very disappointed in To the Wonder. I like this one a lot more. I agree with you that his last two films have been less significant and more self-indulgent than his previous work. And I also agree with you about, you know, I think digital editing has changed the way this guy makes movies completely.
No, definitely, yeah.
I mean, if you go back and look at Days of Heaven
yeah,
and compare the editing rhythms of that film to this,
yeah,
it's night and day.
And not just editing, but just, you know, the camera in general. Just,
yes.
Digital filmmaking in general.
Yes.
Allowing him more freedom.
Yeah.
It's not always a great thing.
And, you know, I have to say that in looking back at Terrence Malick's work, and I am, like, you know, I am a massive fan of his movies. To the Wonder is the only one. I'm actually recommending this one, Colin. To the Wonder is the only one where I was like, ugh, you know.
Yeah.
But in looking back at some of his stuff, I got to say the one, you know, and I love Tree of Life. I adore Tree of Life. I really do. But for some weird reason, the one movie that resonates with me maybe the most, oddly, is The New World. It's a movie that I don't know why, but it's of all of his movies, it just has stuck with me the most. I think of everything he's ever done. It's the one movie that has really, for me, and I don't know why. I just think it's such a massively beautiful movie, and I connected with it emotionally, and I thought the acting was really great, and I feel that way about Tree of Life and you know, like Thin Red Line and many of his other films. This is like To the Wonder in that it's just all, it's basically style over substance, but I think there's more substance here than there was Into the Wonder. You mentioned the setup and how it is set up like a tarot reading. And I thought that that was a nice through line. It was one of the only things in the movie that was consistent in terms of through line.
At least it had a through line.
Yeah.
To the Wonder did not.
To the Wonder
and
did
I,
not.
I appreciated that, too.
Yeah.
I do like this movie more than To the Wonder, just not that much.
Right, right. And it's getting to the point now where there's, like, no dialogue in his movies between actors. I mean, it's
yeah.
I mean, seriously, it's gotten to the point where it's like all voiceover or no dialogue or little dialogue. And what?
Did you read the article about who's the actor who plays Lieutenant Dangle on Reno 911?
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Thomas.
He's in the party scene.
Thomas Lennon.
Thomas Lennon.
Yes, right. Yes.
There's an article that came out with him, and he talked about his day of being on the Terrence Malick show.
And by the way, I know, quick comment before you get it. By the way, what kind of collection of people?
Yeah, Ryan O'Neal.
Ryan O'Neal is in it. I mean, there's just some crazy, some crazy, weird, you know, random people just pop up in this movie.
Right.
No, I'm sorry.
Thomas Lennon was saying that when he had never seen a Terrence Malick film, never worked with him before. And he said he didn't know what to do. And Terrence Malick just gave him a sheet of paper that said, "There's no such thing as a fireproof wall." And he's like, "What am I supposed to do with this?" He's like, "It's just for inspiration for what to do.
That's
if you want more, I've got stacks and stacks of these kinds of things. If you want another one, he has Christian Bale. He's like." Is this how it is? He's like, yeah. How long have you been doing this? About 27 days now. And that's what it is, man. That's what you're on board for when you're a Terrence Malick film. You're not going to get a script. You're going to get a piece of paper that says there's no such thing as a fireproof wall. And that's what you got to go on.
Oh, man. That's the best thing I've ever heard, man. That is fantastic.
You got to read the article. It's amazing.
Where is it? If I just
posted it on my Facebook, I'll
post. Oh, post it. Okay, cool. Then I'll check it out. Oh my god!
No, it's a great article. I mean, it's really funny. But that's what's going on. Like, you're right. There's not much dialogue because they're not given much to go on, and it's getting more and more obvious that you can tell.
Yeah.
You know, you can tell when Ben Affleck was in Do the Wonder, he had no idea what to do.
Oh yeah, clearly.
You know, he just wandered lost through that film. Christian Bale has a little more experience with Malick, so he's got a little bit more of a grip, but all the other actors just look completely lost.
Yeah.
And it's starting to look that way.
I would not put this up near the top of the list of Terrence Malick movies. And I do think that it has more in common with To the Wonder than his other films. All right, we got to take a break. And we also have a review of 10 Cloverfield Lane, which is coming up as well with me and Colin reviewing the new movies. We'll take a quick break on 720 WGN. Morning, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, reviewing all the new movies with Colin Suter. Eric Childress is at the South by Southwest Film Festival. We got a report from him a little bit earlier. We'll get another report live from Austin, Texas, reporting on all the new movies he's seeing. We'll get another one earlier during the week. He'll visit with us as well. But we got to get back to the movie reviews. We reviewed Knight of Cups. We reviewed Only Yesterday. And we reviewed The Brothers Grimsby. And now it's time to talk about 10 Cloverfield Lane. And we welcome Colin back. All right, Colin, tell us about 10 Cloverfield Lane.
All right. Well, this is not quite a sequel to Cloverfield, but it's certainly a relative of sorts. Mary Elizabeth Winstead plays a woman who is out for a drive one night. I think if I remember correctly, she's leaving her boyfriend.
She left her fiance.
Her fiance, right.
Yeah.
And she gets in a car accident. And when she wakes up, she finds herself in a strange basement, chained to a wall and with an IV in her. And the basement is owned by John Goodman, who is a bit of an odd character, but is not out to harm her. But later we learn that she's not so much in a basement, but in an underground bunker or fallout shelter, and that the world has been contaminated after an attack by who knows what. Another guy is in there too, played by John Gallagher Jr., and he's also convinced that the story is true. Or is it? We learn a few more things about Goodman's character, and as we do, we start to wonder what really happened out there, if anything. He's a bit of a kook, a bit of a control freak. He's got a bit of a temper on him, and but he's a very, very passionate about this shelter and everything. And they, you know, the characters sort of pass the time. You know, they got a jukebox down there. They got DVDs and VHS cassettes, as he says, and all sorts of ways to pass the time down there. But at the same time, they go, the two characters outside of Goodman go a little suspicious with what's going on. So the audience does too. And this is a kind of a fun little genre film that's a sort of mystery element. These two movies are produced by J.J. Abrams, and this is one of the things he excels at, is, you know, slowly revealing the mysteries and, you know, not giving the audience all the information right up front. And it's kind of fun to try and figure it out while also having three characters who are at times or mostly likable. But John Goodman, who is really the center of the film, and you're never quite sure where he's coming from. John Goodman does a great job of just keeping his character mysterious and being sometimes likable, sometimes not so much at all. This is a very simple film. It's three characters. This might be the film that everybody feared Room would be. You know, I don't want to watch three characters and just in a tight room. This is kind of that film, but this is obviously a different kind of film. I had a good time. I was on board with this movie pretty much throughout the whole thing. The movie isn't obsessed with, you know, giving the audience a bunch of red herrings and a bunch of fake scares or anything like that. I think it does pay off in the end, while also still being very, you know, somewhat ambiguous. And I appreciate that about this film. This is a good alien invasion, or maybe not alien invasion film. Maybe it's something else, who knows? I'm not going to tell you, but definitely I recommend this film. This is quite a treat.
Yeah, I loved it, man. I gotta tell you, Colin, I loved it. And good there, what, I don't know, here's the deal. John Goodman rules. That's all there is to it. He rules. And I'm not just saying in this movie, and he's great in this movie. It's a great performance. But he's good in everything. That's the thing. He's even good in King Ralph, for God's sake.
I've been a fan of his since I first saw True Story.
Absolutely.
In 1987.
Absolutely.
And I had no idea at the time that he was also the football coach in Revenge of the Nerds.
That's right.
Not put that together until much later.
Yep. And, you know, I mean, obviously his work on Roseanne, you know, he created a very lovable and likable and real character on that show. The guy has been great in all the Coen Brothers movies. Just add him to a Coen Brothers movie, and he's the highlight, you know?
Yeah.
It's very, I don't know, there's a little bit of Mad Munt in this character from Barton Fink. You know what I mean? Yeah. There's a little bit of that in there. I kept thinking of, you don't listen at the Barton Fink. And I am absolutely, completely in love with Mary Elizabeth Winstead. I love her. She's so good. And she was great. I really think she's a terrific actress, too. Not just adorable and, you know, and fun to watch. But, like, if you go back and watch the movie Smashed, she's really, really good in that film. And she's really, really good in this movie. I'm not very familiar with John Gallagher Jr., but I liked him in this, too. I think all three of the performances are great. The tension is ratcheted in this movie, man. I mean, it really, really builds. You know, like, all the little complications that happen while they're there, you know, you totally buy it. Everything is set up nicely. Like, there's not a wasted, you know, at one point in the movie, you know, John Goodman needs some stitches, and he says to Mary Elizabeth Winstead, "You got to stitch me up. Come over here and have some vodka." And then he shows her how to chill the vodka.
Yeah.
And obviously that's going to pay off at some point later in the movie. Little things like that. The shower curtain, which gets a laugh.
Yeah.
In the movie, because it's one of the first times where you can actually laugh during the film without feeling creepy about it. That pays off in the movie. So there are these huge, you know, moments in the movie of discovery and payoff. There's a barrel that is brought out pretty late in the film. That also has a massive payoff and comes as a surprise at a point in the movie when you don't think you're going to be surprised anymore. But that's the way I felt about this movie. I didn't know what was happening. I couldn't get a grasp on Goodman's character. Was he really crazy? Did he have a point? You know, what's going on here? And the more that you discover about his character, as, you know, Mary Elizabeth Winstead and John Gallagher, like, kind of discover more things about him without letting him know about it, the tension builds. One of the most intense dinner spaghetti scenes. And I thought it was terrific. I really thought it was great. And I think everybody should see it. So that's 10 Cloverfield Lane. All right. Do we know what's coming out next week?
The new Divergent film.
Oh, God almighty.
And I'm pretty sure we're getting, I think, Miracle from Heaven or something like that.
Right.
One of those faith-based films.
Right.
I also want to make mention before I get out of here, the Chicago Critics Film Festival announced our first 7 films.
Right.
This week. And our full passes are now available on the Music Box website, or you can go to ChicagoCriticsFilmFestival.com and look at all the 7 films we announced. I'm really excited about them. I haven't seen any of them, but I'm excited about them.
Yeah.
And, you know, $150 for a full pass, you could potentially see 30 or some films with that.
Okay. Kind of money, so. And again, we'll keep you updated on that as it comes along. All right, Colin, thank you, man. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
All right, and we'll talk to you next week. Colin Suter, everybody. We will take a break. It's Nick DiGilio on 720 WGN.